Welcome to the School Projects Podcast. Today's topic is neurodiverse interpretations of conversational language. I am interested in this topic because I myself have ADHD and I have a lot of friends who are neurodiverse or on the autism spectrum. I started doing my research on how neurodiverse or neurodivergent people interpret language differently from neurotypical people. And I got a couple articles, mostly about people on the ASD spectrum or autism spectrum, that were saying things like, yes, neurodivergent people think differently from us, they act differently from us because their brains are wired differently. They didn't say exactly how they experienced it. They basically just gave the straight facts that a neurotypical person could give. For example, I read an article about autistic players of Dungeons and Dragons. There were two players in that study who were on the autism spectrum, and the rest were neurotypical. And they broke these metagaming rules because they didn't understand how they worked, because it was not something they were quote-unquote capable of understanding because of how their brains are wired or what have you. And while I found articles like these interesting, they didn't feel like they were really talking about the neurodiverse perspective, per se. They were communicating quantitative and qualitative ideas, but it didn't feel personal. It didn't feel like it was told by someone who was neurodiverse, because of course it wasn't. So it felt like there was a gap in the research. I was interested in getting a more primary perspective on the neurodiverse interpretation of language, so I reached out to my two friends who are here with me, Quill and Finn. Thank you guys so much for doing this for me.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
So, do you believe that you are neurodiverse?
Yes. I struggled with this at the beginning of the year. It's kind of new for me. Because I did a lot of masking when I was younger, but, recently I have sort of discovered that I am probably neurodivergent, and I have started to discover what that actually means.
Yeah, I don't think I'm particularly neurodivergent. I do think I'm definitely somewhere on the autism spectrum, and still trying to figure out exactly what that means for me. So while I don't, typically have issues, like, in the day-to-day, like, with social interaction and with other sort of more common neurodivergent issues, it's definitely apparent talking to people that I still perceive things differently.
Mm-hmm. Are you diagnosed with either ASD, ADHD, any of those kinds of like neurodivergent spectrum things? If not, what makes you believe that you have the afflictions that you have?
I am not diagnosed. However, the experiences of my friends that I've met, Quill included, and speaking to them about my experiences has sort of put me on to the, like, oh, I need to do more research about this. So I have researched a lot about, you know, the requirements for actually being diagnosed and what it means to be on the autism spectrum disorder or to have ADHD. And I have also talked with my therapist about it, and although he cannot diagnose me, he has said that I should probably look into diagnosis at some point.
I don't have too much to go off of other than talking with lots of people who are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and their experiences and how they think about social interactions and how they think about problems and systems. And I find that my experience more closely resembles theirs than that of a neurotypical person's. But I have not been diagnosed.
How do you go about conversations with people, like, generally? How do you talk to them? How do you navigate conversations? Things like that.
Immediately my brain wants to break it into multiple parts. So there is the hearing what they are saying, and then there is the responding to it, and the stuff that becomes, the stuff in between of, like, thinking of my response. I have a really difficult time meeting people's eyes or looking them in the eyes, especially because I am not very good at processing what they're saying to me. So often when people are speaking to me, I try to read their lips and make out what they are saying as they are saying it to me so that I can, like, actually comprehend it, which is the listening part. And then the thinking part usually happens while I'm listening to them. I'm sort of contextualizing what they're saying, trying to map out what they mean, and what their point might be, and then also, like, trying to formulate a response. I don't necessarily think in words. There's no internal monologue for me, so I have to think in images, which means that I need to put a little bit more thought behind my response before I say it. And then there's the actual responding, where I try to map out and be very intentional with my words so that people know exactly what I mean. And I also try to be very intentional with my tone.
Interesting. I don't focus nearly as much on, like, listening and contextualizing. For me, a lot of that sort of happens, like, unconsciously. My thoughts while I'm listening are always around what I'm doing physically, so, like, where my hands are, how I'm standing, and occasionally where my eyes are. And as the conversation goes on, I usually just sort of understand what they're saying. And then once it's clear that they're done, I usually respond with an immediate reaction, sort of like an instinctually, oh, interesting, or something like that, which is how I think I began this statement, which usually buys me enough time to sort of quickly formulate, you know, what my actual, like, thoughtful response is, and then I hammer out what that's going to be just as I'm speaking, and I don't worry nearly as much about tone, more so as just, like, what is appropriate with this person, and also, like, you know, what sorts of things one might say in that kind of interaction, especially as just, like, backups if I'm confused or feeling awkward, like the sort of default conversation quips that I often use.
Mm-hmm. Are there differences when talking with peers versus, like, professors or parents or just different kinds of people that you interact with day to day?
I notice a significant difference. I find talking to professors specifically far easier. But I think a lot of that is because I'm often entering those conversations with a goal in mind, with something that I'm asking about, with something that I'm trying to point out. So whenever I begin a conversation with a professor, I have a clear direction and I know what I'm trying to get at. Whereas conversations with peers, especially in, like, Mary Fisher, the lunchroom, are often weirder for me because there's not a direction. It's just sort of, oh, here's a person who I know and who knows me, and we supposedly like each other, and I'm kind of interested as to what's happening with them. So, like, there's much less direction there, and navigating that kind of conversation requires a lot more thought, and I feel like is generally less less interesting, less directed. I need to rely a lot more on defaults than, like, what my brain is actually coming up with.
I feel very similarly to that. And I also want to sort of touch on parents. A lot of the reason why I didn't know that I could be on, could have ASD or ADHD was because of my parents and the living situation that I had with them before coming to college. I have always been very, very aware of the way that I communicate and the way that I use my words and my tone and my body language when I'm around my parents, because I am trying to convey normalcy, I guess, or something closer to that. So when I am talking to my mom, I am not fidgeting nearly as much. I am making as much eye contact as physically possible, and I try to get my point across very clearly and concisely. Whereas if I'm talking to peers or even my professors, really, I allow myself, like, more time to actually think and more time to actually talk and convey what I'm thinking and feeling, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that actually really trips me up, I work for the IT help desk, and we get calls all the time, and I stutter and fumble my way through it because I don't know what those conversations are supposed to look like yet, and there is a lot of, like, unknown for me on the tone or the inflections that people are using. It's not very easily communicated to me, and I cannot pick up the social cues that I'm supposed to pick up, especially not over the phone when I can't see their face. So oftentimes I feel, like, very anxious when I pick up the phone, or I feel like my mind hits a wall, sort of, and that is a new thing that I'm trying to navigate.
I've gotten pretty well adjusted to communicating with people over the phone without face. I think because I spend so many years online in party chats and game chats and things like that, where all I had was voice to go off of. So I've just been super used to that. That's never been something that I've struggled with. I also work at the help desk. And also just on the fidgeting note briefly, I find myself, I don't necessarily need something to fidget, I just need something to focus on. So if it's a casual conversation with friends, or I'm in a comfortable space, I can fidget with something more obvious. Like right now I'm spinning a ring in my hands as I'm speaking. But if I'm talking to a professor, it's often just me thinking about how I'm standing or where my eyes are. Or like I'll move my tongue in my mouth while they're talking.
What, if anything, do you notice when talking to neurotypical people? Do you notice how they act or speak differently from you?
I think a lot of it is in topic of conversation. I think neurotypical people are far more likely to sort of engage in like niceties and small talk that I often prefer to skip, especially with people who I know are neurodivergent or people who I'm comfortable with. Whereas like neurotypical people who I have conversations with throughout the day-to-day, they often like open with small talk and then use that to guide into wherever they're going. And that was not something that I understood until, like, I remember when I figured it out senior year of high school, and was like, oh, that's how this works. And then was suddenly able to navigate those conversations. But prior to that, just struggled.
Yeah. I'm very similar to that. I remember feeling like everybody sort of had inside jokes and I was never a part of them almost. That is a feeling that I equate to sort of like speaking to neurotypical folks, because there seems to be a rule book. There seems to be a format that they use to talk and also like have conversations with each other. And I have seen my mom, you know, talk with other people and my dad talk with other people using this manual, and it seems like a very structured thing. And it feels like a rule book that I don't have, or play cards that I don't have, if that makes sense. So I just noticed that it's a lot more structured, I guess, or just the flow feels more like there's supposed to be a structure there, I guess.
Yeah, I feel you. I know you're in Conlang School. Do either of you know anything about, or you, I guess more specifically, Grice or Gricean maxims?
Gricean maxims?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay, let's pause and talk about this. Paul Grice was an eminent philosopher and linguist who researched the ways people derive meaning from language. In his book, Studies in the Way of Words, Grice outlined the main maxims of conversation, known today as Gricean maxims, which describe how people communicate when they want to make sure that they're properly understood by others. The maxims are as follows. First are the maxims of quantity. There are two maxims in this category. The first is to make your contribution as informative as is required. Provide all of the information which is necessary for the purpose of the current exchange. Do not leave out anything important. The second is do not make your contribution more informative than is required. Leave out any unnecessary details that aren't important to the current exchange. Next are the maxims of quality. There is one super maxim, which is try to make your contribution one that is true. The sub-maxims of this are do not say what you believe to be false. Avoid stating information that you believe to be wrong, unless there is some compelling reason to do so. If you do choose to include it, then provide a disclaimer that points your doubts regarding this information. The second sub-maxim is, do not say that for which you lack evidence. Avoid including information that you can't back up with supporting evidence. If you do choose to include such information for some reason, provide a disclaimer that points out your doubts. Next is the maxim of relation. There is one, to be relevant. Make sure that all of the information you provide is relevant to the current exchange. Omit any irrelevant information. Last are the maxims of manner. The one super maxim is to be perspicuous, or be clear. There are various additional maxims of manner. The four specific ones are, one, avoid obscurity of expression. Avoid language which is difficult to understand, such as because it contains words the listener doesn't know. Two, avoid ambiguity. Avoid ambiguous language which can be interpreted in multiple ways, and which therefore makes it difficult for your recipient to understand what exactly you're trying to say. Three, be brief. Provide information in a concise manner that allows your recipient to focus on the key details. 4, be orderly. Provide the information in an order that makes sense and makes it easy for your recipient to process it. If you had this like as a reference point, like in your general day-to-day life, do you think you would try to refer to it or keep going about like what you would normally do?
Listening to that list as you were reading out loud, I remember figuring a lot of this out at various stages in my life. I don't know if it's something that like would be helpful to refer to in a conversation, but I think it would be interesting to sort of like have and look at every now and then, just to sort of see if there are things that I'm aware of and thinking about in a conversation, and like which aspects I am taking into account and which ones I'm like, oh, I've literally never thought of that before, because a couple of them had a very clear, oh yeah, I remember figuring that out, and then a couple I didn't have a strong enough reaction to, so I need to like look at it again and think about it a little bit longer, but it would be interesting. It's just sort of a long-term goal. Make sure I understand all of those little checkboxes.
So now I kind of have my own system, if that makes sense, for whether or not I am participating in the conversation. And I mean, one of the things that I have had to kind of unlearn is the masking and the intense masking that I would do for like literally everybody I encounter, say for like very close friends or very close relatives. And I have sort of allowed myself more space to not necessarily be in the quote-unquote normalcy that neurotypicals usually have, and therefore have created a system that is a mix of both the things that I have learned via masking and via trying to partake in that normalcy, and then my own way of doing things. And I would rather stay with that system because it feels more authentic almost. And I feel like if I were to try and go off of this set of rules, it would almost feel too robotic.
Grice eventually, as the years went by, was criticized for his maxims of conversations being inherently ableist and against neurodivergent people. Do you think having a quote-unquote set of rules for how a conversation should be held is ableist or discriminatory in any way?
I think it's vaguely discriminatory in the sense that like those are not, and in choosing what the default is and enforcing people who don't like have those as the default to like sort of conform to that system, but I think it's just sort of like concepts and a description of how things usually flow. I think it's interesting, but I think if anyone were to try to set it as rules, it would be ableist.
I agree with that. I think that it functions as a guideline, and that's great, and that people who want to use it can. And it can be helpful for people who, you know, are trying to navigate conversations and all of that. However, enforcing it or creating it as, like, the way to have conversations and the better way to have conversations would be ableist.
Mm-hmm. Diverging from that, I know you've kind of both touched on this already, but what difficulties, if any, do you have when having conversations with other people? Like, is there anything that goes through your head, like, that you worry about or that you pay extra attention to?
Yeah, I think my top two things are sort of what I'm communicating with my body language and where the conversation is going and what the other person is trying to talk about when it's not something that seems particularly relevant, or when it's not like when it's not just someone coming up to ask me a question about something that I'm involved in, and they're just coming up to like talk to me about stuff, I struggle with finding sort of the direction of that conversation and how to continue having it.
I struggle quite a bit with intention, also, and like I'm also very aware of like where I'm standing, what I'm looking at, how I am conveying to other people, but I also worry an awful lot about what that person is trying to convey to me, and what their expression is while I'm talking, or what that expression is while they're talking to me. I am very, like, aware of trying to pick up any information that they give me, and I struggle quite a bit with picking up, like, their tone or in their inflection. Are they asking me a question? Are they asking a rhetorical question? If it's a rhetorical question, do they expect me to answer, or do I just sit here and stare at them? That sort of thing. There's a lot of, like, things that are up in the air, and I can't, like, I find it difficult sometimes to actually nail down exactly what I'm supposed to do or what I'm supposed to say.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it people are already sort of digging into now. A lot of people, especially like college students and younger folks, are becoming more comfortable like clarifying things about tone and about intention. And I'm also thinking about in casual conversation. I feel like I've noticed a shift in, like, people willing to be direct and not take it rudely, but that also could just be my perception difference. Sort of as in, like, I feel like there was a stronger negative reaction when I was younger to people being super direct with their questions and conversation and things like that, whereas now I'm seeing more of a shift where people are willing to sort of ask directly what they're trying to ask about, instead of sort of like dancing around it, like I would often perceive neurotypical doing.
Oh boy. I think that I've noticed a shift as well, especially as more people are talking about their experiences as neurodivergent people or people who are on the autism spectrum disorder or who have ADHD. And I think that the shift begins there, almost, if that makes sense, if we continue to advocate for ourselves and sort of make people aware of, like, oh, there is, like, a difference of the way that people perceive information that they get from conversations, or there is a different way to, like, have conversations that are not so structured and formal, then it'll slowly start to shift towards something that is more helpful. But I think that neurotypical society should continue to focus on, like, the idea that not everything is so cut and dry, or not everything has to be so structured in our society, or so one way. I remember when I was younger, there was a lot of people that were like, if you diverge from what this set normal is, then that makes you a weird kid, or you talk weird, basically. And I remember hearing that a lot, because I did not really understand how conversations worked, and would say weird things to them and diverge away from that normal. And I think that expanding and allowing for more things that might be outside of that normal and not necessarily, like, sticking to one thing would be more helpful.
Thank you so much for your guys' insights. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about this.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Jinx.
After doing research and talking with my friends, I now believe that I have a better understanding of how the neurodiverse brain works, at least when it comes to language. It provided a lot of interesting insights that I really appreciated. It added to the research in a way that no neurotypical person could. I thought that was important to add. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next time.